Yep.
Probably the seven Aleph all by the Pei Zayin, right? Last week we saw the Pei Zayin for the end, and how far did we get? Sadi Aleph. Now Sadi Beis. Sadi Beis discusses the case of Milchus of Pleshis. Milk falls into chicken soup, things of this nature. So the halacha is that in both of the shishim, everything's fine. If not, everything's trade. Many intricacies are found over here. Turn the color one piece, another piece. He's in the water, out of the water. The end, and how far did we get? Sadi out. Now Sadi Beis. Sadi Beis discusses the case of Milchus of Pleshis. Milk falls into chicken soup, things of this nature. So the halacha is that in both of the shishim, everything's fine. If not, everything's trace. Many intricacies are found over here in terms of the color of one piece and another piece. He's in the water, out of the water, half in, half out. We're not going to go into every detail. But what I'd like to do is just give you a very brief overview of the concept that's explained in this sermon called Chaticha Nasis Nevela. Three Hebrew words, Chaticha, the piece, Nasis, the comp, the Vela, non kosher. This means is that we have to know, we know that in order to render something null, we require 60 times its value for both of the shishim. What happens if some milk falls on meat and it's and the whole piece of meat falls into potatoes. Potatoes are 60 times the better again. You have milk fall out the meat and the meat was mixed in with a few of the sugar, for example. And the meat got mixed with many other pieces of meat. And the kosher meat much more than 60 times the milk, the original milk, but not 60 times the piece of meat which is rendered trade. So one might have said, look like a subcode right now. How much meat, how much milk? The milk above the position. That's what we would have said. But Katika Nats in the veil. Katika Nats in the veil means that the entire piece of meat, the milk in it, is considered non-kosher. And you require 60 times its entire value in order to for it to be permissible. Yes? So the rest of the stuff is now getting the taste from the original piece of meat. You don't have 60 pounds of piece of meat, everything is fixed. You'll put it off in it. Yeah.
Where do you get the idea of the 60? Where does 60 come from?
Very good question. Where's 60? So, some say 60 is not a holy number. Just by trial and error. If you have 60 parts of its own, you don't taste it. Yeah. 3 ounces mixes 180 ounces, you don't taste it anymore. Others say there's a more than derivation for it from the Torah, from Halacha Moshe Sinai, even perhaps. We will stick with the simple shot because it's just a number which is, if, in most cases, you will not taste the food if it's nullified in 60 times its value. If, in fact, you do taste it, very powerful flavor, for example, called milsa davidu l'tama, something which is very powerful in flavor. And 60 won't help. It really doesn't help. Okay. Now the question becomes, let's leave out basa v'chala for a moment, and go to other prohibitions. Thank you. lug gets mixed into a chicken. Case we get. And then the chicken gets mixed into other chickens. So let's do the math. The sum total of chickens is much more than 60 times the blood. If you don't have 60 times the chicken, what's the name? Shulchan Aruch said it's kosher, and there are more said it's trash. If you're Sephardi, you can eat all the chicken, and if you're Ashkenazi, you have grown out. Big question, the Chatichan answer, the veil applies beyond Basa B'Cholom, where it's originally existing in Torah law, and exists probably by rabbinic law in other, for other prohibitions as well. Yes? Ah, very good. The original piece, if you can pick it out, remains fresh. The other 50 or 40 are kosher. Whether this is applied only to a solid piece or even applied to liquids. This is a question which the Rambam discusses. Some say it does not apply to liquids, some say it does. This is very relevant in many, many cases. For example, a food which was partially trade, a small percentage, 2%, was trade. So, 2% of the food is trade, the whole thing is viewed as trade. Let's say, for argument's sake, by mistake, someone cooked this non-kosher food in a pot. A kosher pot, if I made a mistake, cooked non-kosher food. Why is it non-kosher? 2% of it was non-kosher. In a pot. The pot absorbed the taste of this food. And now you cook something kosher in the pot. Is the second food kosher or non-kosher? Well, as a rule, we don't know how much of food is absorbed in the pot and how much isn't. So we have to worry that maybe all the food is absorbed in the pot. Up until the buy of the pot for sure. And we know, by experience, that the inside of the pot does not have 60 times the volume of the metal of the pot. So if you therefore say, Katita Nasa the veil applies to other prohibitions, aside from Basa B'Chol, then what emerges is that the whatever's cooked in the pot is going to be tricked. Make a simple calculation. Trade and kosher together got absorbed into a pot. 98% was kosher, 2% was trade. So you want to know, got absorbed in, how much do we have to worry about coming out? If you view the entire 100% as trade, the chatika nasa nevela, so in effect, the same as if pure lard is cooked in the pot. Someone put lard in, by mistake, into a kosher soup. It's 2%. If you say chatika nasa nevela, the entire soup is considered trade. So you have a 5-gallon pot, so 5 gallons that went in, and you consider the entire pot to be one stick of tarpas, one piece of non-kosher impacted on the second soup which is cooked there, which happens to be kosher soup, and if it renders a trade. If you would not say chatika nasa nevela, which is the fact of the Shulchan Aruch, if you would not say chatika nasa nevela, then all you have to worry about is the 2 ounces of lard which was put in the first place. Because the rest, although you couldn't eat it, is not considered itself intrinsically non-kosher. It's kosher food, which you can't eat because of the mixture of the non-kosher. You calculate next mixture, the next food being cooked in the pot, you don't have to worry about the volume of two little spoons of flour that was put in. That's a major dispute. It's called Chatit HaNasan available lot. Even according to the Ramo, who accepts Chatit HaNasan available, with other prohibitions aside from Basa Bakala. So he said that it was called a Hefsid Gadol. It's a very great loss which may be incurred. You have a right to be lenient. This comes up all the time. I mean, I shouldn't say all the time. It comes up sometimes when there's a mistake in the kashrus agency and they allow something to get by. It's 2% not kosher. They cook it in a pot. And that same pot they cook for kosher food later. These things can really happen. Okay. Now I've gotten a much more common. This thing I hope never happens to you, this stuff. I hope you'll never ever have meat fall into your milk or milk fall into your meat. And if it does, I hope it'll be less than 160. I hope so. And you can, you know, I guess you probably can get through life that way. I hope so. But the next thing is much, unfortunately, more common. A drop of milk falls on the outside of a flesh of the pot. So what happens? It depends. Did it fall outside the pot, on the outside of the pot, on the bottom here, where the chicken soup was to be found? For argument's sake, a big pot of chicken soup. It's half full. When the water, when the milk spritzed, did it hit the top half or the bottom half? Or the top? On the outside?
Okay.
No, no. Half full. Is that later? Yes. Everything's hot. So what's it did? You have hot milk fell on a actually truth, the milk doesn't have to be hot. The milk is, you mentioned it on that sweet. The chicken soup is on the bottom, the milk's coming from the top. So when the chicken soup is hot, it's good enough or bad enough. So the milk fell on the chicken soup, pot's full of chicken soup. Top half is empty, the bottom half is full. Let me ask you a question. Which is worse? Which is worse? Fell on the top half or the bottom half?
Bottom half.
The first reaction would be, it's worse if it fell on the bottom. That's what the chicken soup is.
Right.
The Shulchan is like this. If it falls on the bottom, it's usually no problem. Why? Because the drop is bottled to shit. Because this drop, we say, look, one of two things. Either the drop stays outside, there's no problem at all, or if it penetrates inside, and if it penetrates straight through into the chicken soup. Either way, no problem with both of the shishu.
What if it fell on
inside? I've
gotten
it.
So either way, there's no problem. If it falls inside, then
both of the shishu, or? If it doesn't, no. If the milk penetrates inside, both of the shishu. Stay that side, no problem.
That's
like
the pot.
Wipe it off. Yeah, wipe it off. It disintegrates. The bigger problem goes to the top of the pot. Why is that? Why is that?
Because
we're afraid, like this. We're afraid that this drop will hit the top of the pot and will move. Travel within the metal of the pot, encompass an area which, for example, is 50 times its volume. So now it will render that portion of the pot dairy. Because the, you have no idea how far this drop is going to go. We don't know. So the problem then is going to be. What will happen when you then empty the soup? And the soup will be poured along the side of the pot and will pass over that area of the pot which has now been rendered non-kosher. Why non-kosher? we've had the absorption of chicken soup from last week in the palace vault. Well, actually, then the non-kosher, I was going to say from this morning, which was meat. Now the milk traveled in a part of the area of the top of the pot. Now when you're pouring over, it's pouring over the drained part of the pot. So you have a big problem. What do? You don't touch it until it cools off. If it happens, just let it turn off the fire, let everything cool off until it gets beneath the former 2 hours of touch, and then you can pour it out. 1 second, I'll just finish, I'll take all your questions. But the custom is even more strict. Some of the custom that you just render the entire thing draped. The drop falls on top, you say it's no good. We don't rely on the calculation you just made. We say, well, we don't know exactly where it went part of the way, maybe it went only halfway, then while we're trying to cool off the pot, but some steam came up and bumped into that, and it came down again. We can't be so precise, it's not a laboratory. But there's some who say, in any such case, you have to prohibit the entire pot. One exception. Exception is a case in which one little drop of milk fell on the side of the pot near the fire. Then we have a right to assume the fire burned it up. This small drop in a very hot area that burned up won't cause any impact whatsoever. Really in a pinch. If there's a thinking question, you're really in a pinch. There are those who say that we can be lenient even in the case in which the milk spilled on the top of the pot. Even if you have to pour it up out right away when it's still hot, on the ground that we do not apply Haticha Nasa Nevela when something's in a pot, opposed to when it's food. This is a summation of a very complex matter. I think I went into the details. Just remember, if you have a spritz of milk and a pot, and a pot of chicken soup, you have a very serious shot on you. There are many variables. Remember that's the challenge. Maybe you have to shout before you do anything. We don't want to pour the chicken soup out until later. Many of you notice that some milk spilled in the pot of chicken soup, call the rabbi right away. Or do anything else. Yes, this can happen. These things can happen. Now take a question. Yeah?
I don't understand. If the milk fell on the outside of the pot, I don't understand what we're worried about. I mean, the way pots are made, how can a drop of milk penetrate the steel or whatever the metal structure of this pot, the one little drop of water.
Very good question. The assumption of the Gemara is that foods penetrate through metal, earthenware, just about every substance. There would also maintain the reality nowadays that we have factories in which, for example, metal pots are manufactured under rigorous and uniform conditions, the There's no penetration whatsoever of taste through the medrash. Yes, there are rabbanim who, if they're in a pinch, they have a few other things going for them, will draw it into the, forgive me, into the pot, or into the hopper as well, as an impossible grounds for leniency. But we're not exactly sure that's true. Could be something that's going through even today. You have to check it out with radioactive isotopes. Something of that nature to know if it's really true, nothing goes through.
So what if right after the drop falls on, quickly wiped off on the towel? So then you have the chance to...
Another thing, the Aruch HaShulchan writes that he thinks that perhaps we can be lenient if there's not enough time for it to get through. Absorption takes time. Even if it happens, it happens in the flesh. So there are those who accept it, those who don't accept it. In this case, it's not so simple to accept it, but it's also a fact. Quoted by others even before the Aruch HaShulchan. This is a Chuvah quote. It's in the Kotei. Forget the word. Yes? The pot absorbs the milk if it's beneath the soup line. So we have a right to say what we call an Hebrew memanasha. Either way, take either extreme. Either assume that the milk never got into the through the pot, so therefore the chicken soup is kosher. If it got there, it went all the way. And therefore the chicken soup is again kosher. Why? Both of the shish. No problem. Only when it falls on the top of the pot, we cannot be guaranteed that that's one of these two extremes. It would be worse than both.
The status of the food and the
pot is
that you can see.
I don't
hear
what you're
saying.
Yes, sure. Even in this case, as we described earlier, we said if it falls beneath the soup line, right? So what do we say? That the soup is going to be kosher, kosher b'shishim. You are right. That the pot is a problem. So what do you do? If the pot becomes a problem, it absorbs some of the milk, what do you do about the soup? You're right, thank you for reminding me. That's what you mentioned. If that happens, what you do is pour the soup out right away. Before you call the rabbi. You have to be such a funny situation. In some cases, you pour the soup out right away, you're making a trick. In other cases, you leave the soup in the pot, you begin making a trick. You gotta be the rabbi. You know, you call him, it's a beeper. And even then, it'd be too late. But the problem, and the general rule is, if it falls beneath the water of the soup line, spill it out right away. And if it falls above the soup line, don't move, let it cool, turn off the fire, let it cool. Let's get past that. If you remember, we can remember, because it's so flustering. But if you have to write down your notes and put the sign, an emergency, this is what you do. Yeah?
How do we understand that if
the
tiny piece of milk falls on a piece of meat, and but it's better with shishim, how do we understand that if the piece of meat itself is kosher, how do we understand that if it's the entire
that the milk is not part of the shishim in the first piece of meat?
Okay,
no problem. Yes?
Are we talking about milk falling on the outside of the pot?
Outside of the pot.
Okay, the other question is, if the milk falls directly into the soup, so it's not the shishim.
Correct.
However, if it penetrates the pot and it mixes, milk is now mixing with this morning's pasta. And then both of those, when you pour out the soup, are going to go into the soup. Why isn't that
Bhagavad Gita?
It's a different type of
Bhagavad Gita. It is
Bhagavad Gita.
It's also Bhagavad Gita.
Why would we have question on
that? No question. As long as the milk falls beneath the soup line, it's Bhagavad Gita.
What if it falls above?
Ah.
That's what I'm saying. Even if it falls above,
they have a major problem. Why? Because the milk doesn't go directly into the soup. The milk hangs out on the top of the pot for a while. Right? Rendering it free.
What?
Because it's milk and the pot is its own soup. So, trade. So if we knew that the milk would go and somehow spread itself thin, so it would be what? Bottle of the shishin, there'd be no problem. We don't know it for a fact. You know what the poskim say? If you have 3,600 times the volume of the drop, and you're okay. What's the risk of what the root of that number? What's the root of that number, Lou?
60.
Correct. 60 times 60. So you say, look, you can't go wrong. But if it's bread, follow me? I don't go into these details. It gets complicated. But if you don't have 2600, you can run into a problem.
The question is this. If there's a pot, there's an area that's traced. Fine. But it's trade with Masa Vanilla, right? So when you pour out the kosher soup, the soup is okay, because while it's passing through the trade plate, it would have been the milk. If that little drop of milk got into the soup, it would have been fine.
She forgot about three words. What are three words? I saw today she had three words. What are three words? That's exactly the problem. The pot becomes an avela. The whole thing. When you're pouring the soup out on top of an avail.
But what I'm saying, when it gets absorbed into the soup.
I think I absorbed immediately, there'll be no problem.
But after that, when it gets absorbed, what is the soup absorbing? Absorbing the tray, right? The tray is composed of the soup itself and milk.
Correct.
Which would be composed anyway if the soup is milk had fallen into the soup.
No, we have no guarantee that the soup is in fact 60 times the amount of the pot that we rendered the tray. The pot that we rendered the tray. It could be a significant part of the pot that we rendered the tray. So you need 3,600 times to guarantee that you can't go wrong.
Why do you
want
to do with a pot that would have soup? Because the soup can't possibly be the lay out something that is more than 60 times the soup. If the amount that was causing the whole problem, the milk,
correct. We're afraid that the milk fell out of the pot and took a trip and went into 50 times its volume. Now all that 51 parts of milk is in the tray. Follow me so far?
Yeah.
Now when the soup pours over it, that 51 times can make another 50 times its volume trip. A lot of soup? No. Figure it out. Yeah? The soup is okay. The only problem is, it was mentioned, that the pot could be rendered the tray. Right? If it stays in the end, if you leave the soup in there long enough, the pot could perhaps render the soup tray. You gotta pour it out right away. Pour out the other side right away. Yeah. You think they're confident, it can happen. That means the shadow. Not so simple. Okay. Now another thing can happen. This test active theory can happen. You have a plastic chicken soup is starting to spritz. Chicken soup starting to just sort of, let's say, overflow its from the pot. Lands on a middle of a cup. Call this Irui. How shall we discuss yet this year, Irui? Did we? Maybe not. Yeah, did we do much, no?
Yeah.
Irui, did we mention Irui? Pouring? No? Let's get the background. Okay, we're going to back up a step. The thing called a Kli Rishon. Did we mention that yet? No. A Kli Rishon is a pot which is or was on the fire. The Kli Rishon is Bevasha. Kli Rishon could cook on Shabbos. Kli Rishon can cause an absorption of taste. Then there's Kli Sheni. What is Kli Sheni? We discussed this.
No, we didn't mention
that.
That
year,
no,
that.
You mentioned
no,
we didn't.
So we added this year too. Mm-hmm. Lee Shaney is a plate which was never on the fire. Never on the fire. So last year we learned with the Shabbos, Lee Shaney ain't a mevasher. Lee Shaney does not cook. We're not learning about Shabbos this year. We're learning about absorption of taste. According to most poskim, just as Lee Shaney is not mevasher, doesn't cook, so too is no blia, is no absorption of taste. Goes together. Some disagree. Two opinions in single kufei. Ramo and Kushkas to Shav is lenient. Let's review. Kli Shani, there will be called Bulia and Gishel. Why did I say Kli Rishon?
Yeah,
I said that wrong. Kli Rishon is Bishel and is Bulia. It cooks on Shabbos, it also could cause taste to be absorbed. Kli Shani is no Bishel. And according to most, when we follow, he's stuck. There's no Bulia either. Let's give you an example. If I have I have hot water. I take that water in a kettle. Put the kettle off the fire. Pour it into a cup. What's the cup?
Cliché.
Incidentally, why is cliché more lenient than cliché? What's the difference? What's the basis for it? So,
because the heat is escaped, doesn't it?
Yes, but there's another twist. The walls are cold. The walls of the cup start off cold. Whereas the walls of the pot start off hot, start off hot. The walls are cold, the heat dissipates. The walls are hot, the heat strengthens. So good. Now the always in between. Called Iru. Let me explain. We have a practical example. Someone took a non-kosher soup. You call it the soup cubes? They call it soup cubes? The non-kosher soup cubes and put it into this cup, which is filled with water, which was poured in from the kettle. Strictly speaking, the cup remains kosher. Don't believe it, huh? The cup is kosher. Why is the cup kosher? The answer is, Kli Shaney is Einam Mevashel. There's no cooking in a Kli Shaney. And therefore, there's also no absorption in Kli Shaney. What happened to the following case? I pour Treka soup into a cup. This is trickier. It's not like either extreme case. It's not like the case of the Kli Rishon, where if I cook Treka soup in a pot, that's the classical case of the pot is Treka. Kli Rishon. It's not like the case in which I have a pre-existing cup filled with water. Then I put in a soup cube, Treka soup. That's cliche. Here's in between. I'm pouring Treka soup into the cup. Iwud. So in Hilchos Shabbos, we also know about Iwud. We also in between. When most hold, three different opinions, most hold, that Iri is in between. It is not cooked or absorbed fully, completely, nor can it be ignored completely, Rather, it cooks and absorbs. We call it kidei klipa. It's a phrase we had, I think, before. Klipa is a peel. So it'll absorb a peel's worth, a peel's thickness, as thin as possible peel imaginable, of the cup into which it's poured. Of course, it means the cup is drank. Something similar to last week. That you pour hot treif over cold kosher. Mentioned last week, kato gava, the cold kosher when the bottom wins. Nevertheless, a klipa, peel's worth of the kosher food on the bottom is rendered treif. Even impact on a kedei klipa, on the thinnest peel. Sorry?
It's straight, that's the difference between the fishing and the rishon. It's straight, anyway.
You're right.
You know the different names.
You're right. You're absolutely right. In most cases, it doesn't make that much of a difference. There is one little difference. Hayakasha is the break of clean. If it absorbs completely, you have to kasher it in a like-minded way, in a parallel way, by putting the by cooking boiling water in it, or submerging it completely in boiling water. If it only absorbs the kedei klipa, you pour treif of soup on top of it, you can kasher it for it in boiling water on top of it. That rule is called, in Hebrew, three words, kibolo kakolto. The way it came in, the way it came out. It's the cardinal rule of kasher. We'll discuss kasher later. Now the Shulchan Aruch has a case like this. I have something which comes out of a pot of soup, slithers along some cold surface, and bumps, thud, into milk, to a milk dish, milk food, or the case may be. What is the halakhic status? Follow? Got the chain over here?
It goes
from the soup, overflows, and it keeps flowing, flowing, flowing. It will continue to flow from the very top of the soup pot all the way down the side, let's say, down the bottom. Boom. And the pot of milk. Right over here. Does it render in tray or not?
Into the pot or against the pot?
Let's say against the pot. Well, into the pot. It's more of a pot. Let's say against the pot. So, this is Erud. So at first glance, it should be. It's prohibited. You're right. It is prohibited. Even though to be ended along a cold surface, it's called Nizkal. Nizkal is something to creep through. Move along in the low surface, like you have Zokaleofa, snakes, serpents. So in fact, it renders a trick. But, says the Rambam, Lord Rambam speaks, if, so we call Nipsak HaKiduach. Nipsak HaKiduach means that there's no continuous flow between the pot from which the chicken soup overflows and the, let's call it the pan, to make it simple, and the pan into which the milk pan into which the chicken soup bumps. It's not a continuous flow. In that case, the Rambam said it's kosher. This opens the Pandora's box. Does that mean that whenever this nifsak hakiluah, whenever the flow is interrupted, interrupted means it's not continuous from its original source to its final destination. Does that mean whenever it's not continuous from one to the other, that the There's no halakhic problem? Not necessarily. It's a matter of major dispute. Chazonish, you may have heard of the famous Chazonish, it was a generation ago, two. He said it's mutter. Whenever it's nipsek akiluach, whenever it's not going straight, there's no uninterrupted flow, it's not a halakhic problem. Why? Because the whole reason that iwui causes the problem is because of its connection to the top. Not connected, there's no problem. But he said, 20th century thinker. The problem is that the Shach, who lived in the 17th century, said against it. The Shach said that even though it's nifsek akiluach, it's interrupted, there's no continuous flow from top to bottom, it still caused a problem, what we call a kadei klipa. One of the appeals words is problematic. I'm going to look at Rama over here. Rama also here is not a problem. So we say, no, here's a case where it's a double whammy. It's an iruy which is nifsak, it's interrupted, and it's also nizhal. It's also against another surface. Both. We call two strikes against it. It was interrupted and also banged against the wall. Something was mentioned. Nifsak bin nizka. Both. Then it can have no impact. Why is it so critical? I'll just give you an example right away before you go any further. I'll give you an example. A dishwasher. You know how a dishwasher works? Never look inside. They don't have open dishwasher where you can see. You can see it like in a nursing home or in a hospital. They have a big dishwasher. It's the same theory. It's open for a cafeteria. I can see it down here. They wash dishes down here. Hope so. Well, actually, they have paper dishes down there. Nothing to wash anymore. Now they have anything? They have a dishwasher? What you'll see, and likely what you'll see, is that the water comes out of a source of hot water and starts not a continuous flow. It starts the flow sort of divides, put into a hose. Because the effect of spreading the water out in all different directions. And likely the water is in effect separated from the original source, which is the force coming in. Dishwasher. In all likelihood. In addition, the water's banging against walls. Bangs against this wall, against that wall, the dishwasher, bangs against this dish, that dish. So it's very likely an iwi which is both nifsak and nizchal. And this is one of the main leniencies that we use. You find suddenly, which often happens, a milchika spoon in the place of dishwasher, the mouth. So one of the reasons why we have a somewhat lenient is this. Iwi is nifsak and nizka, both. In which case, even the Shach, who was worried about Iwi and nifsak as such, has to admit, based on this Rama, that it's not a problem. I know this is a little complicated. I don't expect anyone to understand it completely. We'll come back to this in a few weeks. Next time. We'll see it from a different angle. Yes, ask a question now. Sure. We're not discussing glass. Are there really glass pots out there? Are there really serious guys? Yeah?
Pirates.
Cook chicken soup in a pirate's pot? Really? That's only used for water.
You can make like rice with chicken things in it. You can make rice things that are flay sugar, like pieces, like chicken stuff, and you can make it in a pirate's pot.
Yeah.
That's sure. Casseroles. Chicken.
That's the other question. You can really ask that. Hey, August. Theoretical question.
Mm-hmm. No problem. Do chorva, use only glass pots. Yes?
Down
the side, and then it plunges for a second, and then it collects and it drops into something else.
Did you see that the case of mixed accident?
Yeah, it does have a continuous flow, that's right.
So it doesn't have to be a different surface other than the pot.
It
could be
the pot
surface considered
end pot. I don't quite see a case, but if it comes over the top of the pot, yeah. It goes down, I'll have to gather some kind of counter or some kind of something. No, I think so. That's going to be this one. I think so. Yeah, it should be somewhat cool. Now we come to something much more practical. Till now, these things happen, but it's only on occasion. But things go wrong. Now we're ready to discuss day-to-day activity. It's based on the next initial menorah, which tells us the concept called zeil, steam. In the case of the initial menorah, here you have a pan of milk under a pot of meat, filled with challah. Okay? In the old days, had a kind of an oven, it looked about it was on a shopping list here. It looked sort of like this, kira. You put the flesh and pot in it. Exact fit. Possible. Steam over here is compressed steam. Has no touch it. This is an inch, 5 inches, left between here and here. Steam goes up, goes right into here, boom, trace. That's the initial one. Everyone see it? Got it? Of course, the obvious problem is, how does it affect our lives? Lou, what do you say? What's the closest you can think of to this in your kitchen? about to touch it. This would be an inch or 5 inches left between here and here. Steam goes up, goes right into here, boom, trade. That's the initial amount. Everyone see it? Got it? Of course, the obvious problem is, as it affects our lives. Lou, what do you say? What's the closest you can think of to this in your kitchen? Yeah? No. That's true. An oven. An oven is a problem. How do you have one oven? There's a number of critical factors we have to discuss right now. Yes? That's one of the factors to discuss. Is it a two-way street or one-way street? Heat rises, right? And come back down again? Well, no. That's one issue. Anybody else? Another issue, maybe? Change the picture a little bit. Therefore, according to Rav Moshe, I'm allowed to cook in my quote-unquote fleshig oven solid milvics without a problem. And even though the walls and part of the ceiling, they have absorbed fleshigs, but that can't get down. It can't get down to a medium of steam. And there's no steam, and now I'm heating up some pizza, for example. I can heat up pizza in a fleshig oven, no problem. Why? Because there's no way for the meat taste absorbed in the, assuming it was absorbed in the vented oven, it can't get down. It can't get down, so then the pizza's going to be kosher. No one will go up for the pizza to the oven because there's no steam. Yes?
So if the steam can penetrate, take example number one, right? If the steam can penetrate the basar pan, why can't it penetrate the cover on top of the pan? In other words, so if the pan is covered, why are you allowed to cook it in an oven if steam can penetrate?
It's uncovered, because there is no cover.
No, I'm saying in Moshe's exception number one, where he says you can cover a milchig pan and cook it in a fleshig oven because it's covered. Mm-hmm. So the steam really doesn't have a place to go. But the same way that the steam, then why wouldn't over there, in the case of the basar being on top of the challah, that the basar be considered like a cover and then the steam can't go anywhere? Either the steam can leave it something on top or it can't. Either it can go through it or it can't go through it.
The simple answer is that the steam can get into the cover and thereby render anything which touches the cover trick. That's the difference in two cases. Here, it gets into the cover and the meat touches the cover. In our case, it gets into the top cover. Big deal, but the oven top cover is a foot higher. Let's see that for the moment. Maybe there are other answers to it. Good question. This is the view of Rav Moshe Feinstein's in front of the Rambam, in Igros Moshe. There are those who are more strict than him, and there are those who are more lenient than him. Those who are more strict say, no, we don't trust covering of the liquids because of too much steam we get out. And no, we don't trust the fact that solids don't produce any steam. Maybe they are, they do produce steam. It leads you to all kinds of extra stringencies. That's a stricter view. The more lenient view says, our ovens are no problem at all for two reasons. Number one, they're vented, and therefore there's nothing absorbed in the first place. And number two, even if there is some absorption, it won't come back down again. Those are the two disputes we mentioned earlier. So therefore, my opinion, I tell people, is to follow the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Tells you how you have a feeling that if someone was more strict than him, and someone was more lenient than him, maybe he's right. Compromise. Of course, that's the psak. It's an ideal. The ideal is to be more strict, yeah. If you have two ovens, it's even better. Or if you cover everything, even solid, and if you don't rely on covering for liquids, or if you wait 24 hours and somehow you can't, all this stuff is quote-unquote better. But you can't demand it of people. The most you can demand of people is to follow Rav Moshe's view. Now, on the other hand, post facto, if someone would have an oven, didn't follow Rav Moshe, but just use it for villages and flavors, not same time, one after the other, with abandon, without even thinking about it. So post facto, we can say everything is kosher. On what grounds? We said before, either when it's meant there's no absorption, or if it's absorption, there's no return on the way down. So there is really ground to be more to be lenient in this kind of post facto situation. But ideally, you should follow the rules of the Igros Moshe. Is that clear? This is every day. Okay, it's clear. Yes?
Does
Igros
Moshe also say that you should
do anything else? No. Yes?
What about if you
self clean the oven between fleshings and milligrams? You'll forget. And some say we really shouldn't kashim with pleasures to the limits at all. The million of the Mother Abraham not to kashim with pleasures to the limits. In most, maybe you would be allowed, but if you want to do it, do it. And just make that as part of the mandatory built to the system, I would go for that. Yes? Ooh. Now we're talking. Let's review before we get to microwaves. According to Pesach of Ramosha, which we consider to be the in-between view, bottom line, you should make a decision on your own. Both the inflations or milk. I think no total is better upon inflations. Now, the only restriction you have, if you're using milk, is if it's liquid, cover it. That's not a big restriction. I don't think in all my years that we've been following this track since I'm married, we always follow the power of Moshe's track. I don't know how many times my wife ever had a problem. Does she ever cook a milk uncovered thing? And you know, the one time she said, is this liquid? I said, yes. Is she covered? So kind of casserole? I thought it was liquid milk. I said, milk got to cover. So she covered. She wanted to have it brown. So we covered for an hour. It was for an hour. She covered it for 45 minutes. By that time already there was no liquid left. But she uncovered it to the ground. I remember I had this happening once. It's been out, maybe it was a gourmet kitchen, I don't know, your kitchen. But it doesn't happen too often. So the restrictions don't really run to, don't rip my style too much. Yes?
What about if you have burners and you're cooking, milk soup and chicken soup, let's say you have to open the pile of it so it doesn't overflow, then the heat both, not at the same time, but in general, steam rises to the
hood.
The hood.
I was waiting for that question. The hood. In one of the yeshivas having a tremendous cover a few years ago. All our arm in the tray, everything in the world is tray. Slice cover. What was the problem? They discovered that in most kitchens today, modern kitchens, not so loud, mine's not so loud, there's a hood on top of the stove. Right? Hood, yeah?
Yeah.
And flame goes up, and middle mix goes up, and they get absorbed to the hood. So the hood is tray. And it goes back down again. Everything she cooks in is tray. Everything is tray. Tray. Everything is tray. You can make it. You
have to cook outside.
Little summer. She has raw food only. So you can make a case for it. You can make a case for anything. But it seems to me that that's not really the case for a whole bunch of reasons. Number one, as we said before, it's wide open. It dissipates all over the place. And therefore, there's no reason to assume it's going to be up. There's enough power for it to go up and then come down again. It's dissipating all over the place. That's the reason why we leave it. You want to have two ovens, it's two stove tops as well as two ovens. It's better. I agree. I'm not arguing. There are many people who can afford to have a big kitchen with a whole place inside and a look inside. I wish I had it in my house. I'm big enough. Okay, microwaves. Yes?
I don't know if you wait 24 hours, then
nope.
You can use
anything. No,
I
didn't say that. I never said that.
Okay, so if you have
it,
so if you're saying only liquid milk has to be covered,
how come
it's always like milk that gets covered, milk that gets covered? It's not
sure,
that's not something that way.
I guess some people follow a strict view, and they're afraid that even if solids are going to generate a lot of steam. I haven't found that to be the case. That's true in fact. But if you find it's true in fact, so. Any more questions before we go to microwaves? Yes? I don't think so. Maybe a little bit. When we say it needs steam, we say you need A significant quantity of liquid, and B, I mean really liquid. Liquid that pours. I don't mean sponge cake. Sponge cake pours into a batter. That's not liquid. If you have a milk of sponge cake, you don't require to cover that in your oven because there's very little steam from that. Almost none of this. Let me explain myself. Liquid, when I say liquid, I mean liquid like water, chicken soup, milk. Not the thicker kind of liquids which are really batter-like, which don't produce so much steam. Yes?
Like there's no time
to see that
you have to wait?
Yeah, you have to cool off. You wait till it cools off in the plate. Then you can put it in the milk. What do you mean? Depends on how long they have, I don't know. If you want like 24 hours, it's fine with me, I have no objection. But I don't think it's necessary. Okay. Microwaves. So microwaves are better and worse than regular ovens. Why are they better?
Because the sides don't get hot.
Sides don't get hot? Why sides get hot? Why?
Do you not have to wait for it to cool off if you cover it up?
In theory, you don't, but in practice, it's better to do it. Because if you don't get used to letting it cool off, then it's, you know, the next thing you know, you're going to be a real boo-boo. Generally, it's going to happen if you have glaciers. You want to fill it, let it cool up in between. Back to the microwave. Better and it's worse. So why is it better? Because the walls may not be hot. Why are the walls not hot? What's more obvious? Huh? No what?
There's no fire.
That's what I'm looking for. There's no fire. There's no fire in the microwave. That makes it much better. The walls that sit in the roof don't get really too hot. Could be that a microwave is not even treated as a cremation at all. Why not? Because there's no fire. That's the good news for microwaves. But there's also bad news. Sorry. I'll be honest, it's bad news. What's the bad news about microwaves?
Spill.
From here?
Things spill
all over the place. Spill right all over the place. Smaller space, correct. Don't have vents, correct. The final one is much more steam. Why? Who knows physics? But aside from that, what little I learned, microwaves work only on the liquid. That's how they work. Through the magic of microwaves, if you're heating a piece of meat, a potato, for the fire, you know, potato. If you put a potato in a microwave, so a potato has mass, it has liquid in it. Every cell has some liquid in it. Apparently those waves, they activate the liquid. That's why there's much more steam. You must have noticed this. You see all that in the glass of the microwave. Notice? There's much more steam in the microwave when heating a potato than heating the regular oven. Because the waves are working on the liquid component of the potato. You know everything science, everything is liquid. The human body, 98% liquid, and this is there. That's how it is, you know. The potatoes also have a lot of liquid. Pure basic physics. That's what the microwave works on, so it's much more steam. That's the bad news. Again, the good news is there's no fire. The walls don't get so hot. The bad news is it's not vented. Usually it's not vented. And it's smaller. And there's more steam because the waves work on the liquid. So, what do you do? It's better and it's worse. It's a matter of major dispute among the poskim. And you won't find it in Shulchan Aruch, in the microwave. So, it's a big dispute among the poskim. Some say microwaves are better than ovens, some say they're worse than ovens, some say they're the same as ovens. So these factors are pointing in both directions. So, you know, ideally, all we have to do is follow the owner's manual. And I look inside. The owner's manual says, cover everything in the microwave. Reasons of cleanliness. The like. proper things in the microwave, the amount of steam is reduced very, very dramatically. Some will come out, but it's reduced very dramatically. And then we have a right to be lenient based on the considerations you mentioned before. You don't cover the microwave, things, you know, the foods in the microwave. You're basically relying on the fact that the roof and the walls don't reach what we call Yad Saletis for. Don't reach a very, very hot temperature. We mentioned this a little bit last week, I think, or did we not? About how tall Govar steam rising. And I mentioned to you, I believe, that although it's a matter, maybe I didn't, maybe I'm in a dream world, but maybe I mentioned to you, that although it's a matter of dispute, if the steam is hot and the walls and the roof are cold, cold in the sense not too hot to touch, so my opinion is there's no absorption. If it's not hot, it can't absorb. Others disagree. I didn't mention that at all? No, I'm in a dream world. Okay, it's very possible. I'm mentioning that. I talk about it, we say if it's hot at the bottom and the heat rises, so it could render something on top non-kosher. That only the thing on top becomes hot, or even if it remains cold. That's the dispute. I should add one more point. According to some of our shit, I talk about it, not because of heat rising, but because he was just in its place, wins. 9 times out of 10, with the laws of gravity, the thing in its place is on the bottom, or in the middle, on the meat, chicken, on the cheese. So it's on the bottom, it's in its place. So whether it's hot or cold is determinative. Here's the reverse case. What's in its place? The roof. When the roof is on top, how can that be? Up to gravity. It's that steam rises. It's another reason why we might not apply the principle of Tatar Govar in this case. It's another reason to be somewhat more lenient. So there is sufficient, ample room for leniency in microwaves. Many people have that habit, just putting everything in the microwave like this. Especially salads, I mean, like to think there's less steam, but again, in microwaves it's not so much less. But the best way to do it is just simply to cover cover everything with a piece of saran wrap, or even a paper plate, cover that most of the steam. There's a problem with the microwave. Spillage. That's what you said. Things spill their cassation. Spill. So, clean. Nothing spills, you gotta clean it up. You may ask, but it got absorbed from the bottom.
Absorbed from the bottom.
Next time you put something on top, it's going to get absorbed into that second item. We discussed this last week. I think it was something again, really. It ain't belua yote belua rote. No, didn't mention that at all. Oh, Hashem. Hey, Valua Yose Valorote. Things which are absorbed do not come out without the benefit of significant amount, I told you, of rota, of liquids. A little spill won't be that catastrophic. But the truth to tell, you're better off using having a glass tray on the bottom. Many microwaves have glass trays on the bottom. In any event, not because of cautious. Glass is better because many postings say that it's not absorbed. Clean it up, and it's glass. Another reason I don't have to worry about the bottom. The top, you have to hope that the walls and the roof don't get too hot. There's not that much steam. And a little bit is vented, because sometimes a little bit is vented. And that's the best we can do. But it'd be better to cover. Yes? I want to kasher the microwave. Cover water is a kasher.
Well, I don't know, people
are afraid of this absorption of taste into the walls of the roof, and they may consider it to be Yatzel lettuce, though. No? Or they may feel that as long as the steam is Yatzel lettuce, either the walls and the roof or not, may still be a problem again, for like you said, which I can also not side to. For one of these reasons, they want to catch it. I didn't say so. For those who want to be more strict, they do that. Yes?
What if you cover the ceramic, like it's a little...
to be a quarrel, it will burst.
Right, it'll pop. So then it brings a lot of steam.
It reduces the drastic.
And also with kosher, if you use a mug, does the mug absorb and the mug?
If you want a kosher, you use a disposable, right? Styrofoam cup, put in the water there, 20 minutes, but steam's all up. Yeah, so that, you keep track. You make your microwave, let's say, fleshes. Whenever you're heating up buildings, just make sure to cover, that's fine. No problem. Right, you can cover half. I didn't mean to mean out everything. See, the only thing is, there's no control of the microwave. Yeah, you're the only one living in the house, yes. You see, most people have control of, while the bus controls the oven. But the microwave, every kid walks in there, there's everything wrong. That's why it's a bit of a problem. Yes? Some say. I say if you have to cook up, you have to get something in the microwave, double wrap it. Well, I guess first put the styrofoam, clean it like you can. Then take a rag and wash up the bottom. Hope it's glass, and then put hard plastic between your food and the glass so it won't get anything go through, almost nothing go through. Then double wrap it, then it's okay.
What's the reason for the double wrapping?
Just to make sure that it's afraid in a case of a tray for microwave. It's not just possible, it's worse. It's real targets. A little more strict. Yes?
Just a regular oven, you can also use it.
Yeah, the secret, the well-kept secret. You can use a tray for oven. All you have to do is double wrap it in a tin foil. Double wrap it in a tin, put it in a disposable tin, double wrap around and around and around. And so big deal that the oven was tray. So what? I won't ping it through. Don't tell anybody. But I think it's permissible. It's relevant if you're going on vacation.
A lot of hotels, like in the Caribbean, there's this phone number you can call and they send like little airplane meals to the hotel and you call them and they send them to you every day. I've been to
one. I confess I've never been in the Caribbean.
Don't worry.
Never been.
You don't tell me.
As a what? Exactly. When they do the airplane, you go there to order a kosher meal. What are they doing? They double wrap it. Yeah, double wrap, these two buttons are going to go through. Is there a assumption? Same concept. So we don't believe. Airplanes, we do it all the time. I don't think about it. But we should cook it up. But it's a tray bottle. It's different if you cook it up than the stewardess cooks it. There's a difference. Yes? Well, I would recommend to do it as best you can. If you're in a workplace and the microwave is black tray, I'd recommend doing whatever you possibly can to make it kosher. What can you possibly do? You can put in the styrofoam for a minute, let it steam up. You can wipe the bottom of it. Hope it's glass. Put a hard plastic underneath it, double wrap it, and that's the best you can do. Yes.
So, do we say that koshering it with a cup of water, that can kosher the microwave?
We're not 100% sure it really works. 100% sure.
We're asking in terms of Pesach, like a lot of people
I would not allow you, I don't use the microwave for Pesach. First of all, we'll see later, when it comes to Pesach, we don't trust koshering plastic. This is plastic, microwave plastic is a rule. Right away, strike out.
So can we double wrap it and then use the microwave?
Pace up with mafia for pasha. I strongly recommend putting away the microwave for pace. I have a little bit of lechamoni, feel the gullus. No microwave. Command says that no food, you can have no microwave. You get so addicted to this thing. You were born with it. But you know, when I remember, there was no such thing as microwaves. Yeah. Wasn't that long ago? There was no such thing as microwaves. It didn't exist. He somehow survived. Yes. a concept called the next. There is one more thing I should mention right now. Oh, speak about it over here. So serious? Well, it's called the next time. For the time ever. I don't want to talk about that one foot. So, I wish you all a seat of a chassid next week, I hope to start at 10 to 6. Mr. Chef. Dissipate.